When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs. Oh! Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cleveland Cavaliers have completed their West Coast trip, going 5-1 and heading back home finally. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. And connecting with me now via Zoom is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing good. Cowboy football, playoff football, kicking off in an hour and a half. Sorry to everyone who's probably just now finding out I'm a Cowboys fan. But this is, you know, I was sitting there thinking about that the game that's coming up. I was like, this is the first time I've seen playoff anything since 2018.
There you go.
For any of my favorite teams. So I'm super hyped. I'm feeling unbelievably good in the aftermath of Darius's just best game of his career. Best game of his career by a country mile last night. I mean, that game against the Spurs just feels like a fun scoring explosion by comparison. I mean, the way he took over that game so thoroughly. I mean, it was like, it just felt like he was generating such an easy bucket for others or scoring unbelievably high degree of difficulty shots for himself, like every single play.
You know what? What makes you such a good podcast co-host is you prepare. You relentlessly prepare. And right now you are doing a dry run preparing for playoff basketball by cheering for your Dallas Cowboys, because that's where the Cavs are going. The damn Cleveland Cavaliers are going back to the playoffs. And I completely agree. I think that was by far Garland's best performance of his career. And the reason I feel that way and not some of the other scoring outbursts he had is the situation. We talked about going in how difficult this West Coast trip was. It's really the last big test from a schedule standpoint that the Cavs have this season. I would still say that they're on the road trip, because even though they're coming home for this game against Brooklyn, it's just one game at home in the afternoon, and then they're back on the road for Chicago before...
Not unpacking the bags.
Right, you're not unpacking the bags, and that's a notoriously difficult game. So they're not out of the woods yet, but to go 5-1 on that West Coast trip is incredibly impressive. And for the last two games of that trip, going head-to-head with two of my favorite guards in the NBA, which is DeJounte Murray and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and out-dueling both of those guys, I thought that was incredibly impressive. You look at this game against OKC, and yeah, OKC... They have Lou Dort to throw on Garland, but not a lot of help around him on the defensive end of the floor. But you're still scoring at the end of a road trip when you're very clearly fatigued in a very clear trap game. For them to come out and for Garland to kind of find that burst in the second half and not give up on the game when they're 18 down. It's a level of mental toughness that I don't think we've seen from many Cavs teams, and especially not from players this young. Like, that's what really jumps out to me.
I mean, just the fact they didn't give up on the game, man. Like, and really, it felt like Darius really not giving up on the game. Like, sometimes, you know, it is a mutual effort of, you know, the whole team kind of gets together and says, no, we're not losing this game. I felt like this was Darius just sheer force of willing them through that third quarter.
Yeah.
It felt very, very individualized and targeted. This wasn't Lamar Stevens getting brought off the bench for a burst of energy. And obviously the rest of the Cavs did kick up and started playing really, really good basketball down the stretch. I mean, Evan Mobley had, 10, 12 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
But you just look at, like, it just felt like Darius was just like, no, don't, we're not losing this game to this team we're better than. I don't want to, and he wouldn't let them. It was so fun, man.
Well, that's what leaders do, right? Like, leaders come out and give you that spark when you just, your tank's a little empty, right? And for Garland in that fourth quarter, or sorry, the third quarter, where he had 14 points and 10 assists, he had those energetic and ones, the assist to Evan Mobley. Like, he was getting himself going at the same time that he got everybody else going. And I think that gave them the burst, right? And once that sense of belief is there, momentum, to paraphrase Phil Jackson, momentum's a bitch. Like, seriously, when you start to come back and you start to believe in yourself, you get that last little kick of adrenaline that you need to get over the finish line. And we've seen the other side of that, right, where the Cavs against the Kings would have a big lead, and all of a sudden the Kings start hitting some shots, you get momentum, and it's really hard to stop a team when that happens. But also just the decision-making down the stretch, because we have seen in the past, Garland gets a little fatigued, though the legs are a little tired. You see some mistakes in the fourth quarter and whatnot. And I think this is another kind of sign that there is some progression. You are seeing him make those decisions at the right times, scoring for himself and others. Two buckets right in clutch time, as well as the assist to Evan Mobley. I think he had two assists to Evan Mobley and Lauri Markkanen, which, oh my God, you're talking about Lauri Markkanen bouncing back in such a big way. For him to come out and hit that three only up
it
one.
Wanted it. He wanted that three.
100%
that
wanted that.
Really, really good.
That is a sure sign of some mental toughness there, and really great to see Lauri kind of break out of his slump. Over the last four games, he's averaging about 14 points per game on 55-45 shooting. That is very, very encouraging to see. But for Garland to show that kind of poise under pressure while fatigued in that situation, I think there's not enough compliments you could throw at him. Like, that is just an absolutely absurd performance.
It was star stuff out of him. You know, it was and superstar stuff. That was a superstar game. I mean, 27 and 18 matches the season high for the entire league in assists, and most of them were pretty darn well earned, man. Like, they were not, you know, this wasn't a home scorekeeper.
Yeah.
just dishing out dimes. You know, this was in a hostile environment in a weird game, and he really was the engine that kept them going. They had no answers for him. I thought Jarrett set some of the best screens he's set all year, just wiping out Lu Dort on some of these plays to give Darius enough room, because that guy is a menace on defense. But man, it just felt like he had, you know, like when they played the Suns earlier in the year and they were keeping it tight, they went up early, and then Chris Paul just said, I'm going to Chris Paul you to death in the fourth. Like, Paul had like 4 and 4 in the first three quarters, and then just like every single possession down the stretch just got a clean look for the Suns. Like, that's what Darius did for the Cavs against the Thunder, where it was just like every second he was out there, I had such confidence that either he was going to take a shot he was confident in, or he's going to generate a shot someone else was going to be confident in. And it was a total command of the chessboard game.
And it's really important for him to come out and do this type of performance in games like this, because we saw what happens against Golden State when there's that kind of defensive pressure and whatnot. And the better teams and the questions that will come up in those games are still there. But for him to get these reps, kind of learning how to close against lesser teams, teams that they should beat when you're in these type of situations, when you're tired and you don't have as much left in the tank, learning how to execute and not make mistakes in those circumstances better prepares you to tackle those tougher opponents and those larger matchups. And how he performs in those games as the season progresses remains to be seen. How he does in the playoffs remains to be seen. But when you're seeing this type of high watermark and this type of performance, this is some real, real star stuff. And we came into this season, we were optimistic about Darius Garland, I'd say. You look at the stretch of games he had in April, 15 games where he's averaging 21-7, alongside Colin Sexton, who was having a great stretch there. And we talked about at the time, hey, it's a really good sign that Garland's showing this assertiveness. He's showing these good performances along someone else that's thriving, that's scoring really well. And I think you're seeing once again that when Darius is playing well, it benefits everybody else. There's not standing around and watching. Everyone else eats when Garland is eating. And that's the most exciting thing to me when you look at him really kind of solidifying his case as a franchise point guard for the Cavs.
Yeah, I mean, I there's no way around it. Nashian vibes continue for him in terms of, you know, the way that, you know, his game just kind of is the tide that raises all boats for this team on the offensive end. You know, he just spoon feeds so many good looks. And, you know, I was even noticing it, and this is no disrespect to Brandon Goodwin, who I thought again gave the Cavs pretty good minutes, but
he's been terrific off the bench.
He's been very, very good, but there's just such a difference in the way that, you know, when Darius does get into the teeth of the defense, gets into the paint and kicks it out to a guy like Lauri, he puts it right in the shooter's pocket in a way that, you know, like a guy like Goodwin, you know, like maybe he'll get it there, but it, maybe a little less pace, maybe a little less perfect location. And like his command of the ball, he's throwing some crazy passes. That pass to open the game with to give Mobley the shot, the layup in transition, where he kind of like, I think it was his left hand live dribble, like looping skip pass to hit Mobley in stride. Like he's just in his bag as a passer and a playmaker.
That was a LaMelo-esque pass, right? The left-hand scoop underhand pass, basically half court. Like that is so exciting. And we talked about, like, when Sexton got hurt, it was, okay, now Garland really needs to be assertive. We need him to bring that scoring punch because there isn't enough talented players around them that can provide scoring at that level. And I think what we're seeing right now is with Ricky being out, obviously it hurts the team and some of these games wouldn't be as close if you had Ricky, but there is now a real reliance on Garland to create for absolutely everybody. And sometimes that's going to lead to fatigue, but it's also, once again, pushing him out of his comfort zone and developing the kind of muscle memory to go out there and perform in these ways. And it's really impressive to see him once again take a step up with a teammate going down. You look at the last two games and we talked about how impressive it is. It's even more impressive that he's doing this without Rajon Rondo in, right? Like there is no real proven backup. And Brandon Goodwin, like, he is absolutely showing that he deserves a roster spot.
I tweeted during entering the fourth quarter, like, Brandon Goodwin got to give him three good minutes of just to get, let Darius catch a breather. I think he ended up giving him five.
Yeah.
Of really, really solid play. So, like, all credit due to Goodwin. But yes, I mean, you're not wrong that Darius remains like the only one who really orchestrates the offense at a high level on this team right now. And like, again, like, you know, I think we do got to give him his flowers when this is a dude who we've been very complimentary of all season. But one thing we have given him digs on is his conditioning in the way that you can kind of see those legs start to get heavy. And like, they didn't look heavy in this game. Like he was just in such total control of the game. I don't know what else to say. I mean, and by the way, this is on a night where his 3-point shot was not going. I mean, he went 1 of 7 from three. You know, like that sometimes has been the way we've seen him get going as a scorer. Like in his career, you know, he'll start a little icy, then hit a couple threes, then okay, Darius is kicked in, and like didn't need it in this one. I mean, How many games in the first two seasons do you think Darius scored over 20 points where he only hit 1-3 and like had a good true shooting percentage to do it? You know, like early in his career, he and Colin really were the king of the 20 points on 20 shots games.
Yeah.
And like the fact that he's just finding ways to be efficient, getting to the line, hitting every single freaking free throw he takes, by the way. Feels like he hasn't missed in a month. It's just like total command. And by the way, all this with two turnovers. Like, come on. Two turnovers.
Well, ridiculous. I mean, since the Warriors game, he's had 51 assists and 9 turnovers. Like, that is absurd. That's 5-to-1 turnover ratio, assist to turnover ratio. And
with an unbelievable burden as a creator. It's not like he's Jose Calderoning out there. Big shouts to the newest member of the Cavs front office, you know?
Yeah,
he's not playing like a caretaker.
Thank you for reminding me of that. I forgot about that news and all the excitement of Darius going off, but Jose Calderon joining the front office. You can never have too many good guys in a front office, and you can never have too many billionaires. But you know what? I really do like with this kind of stretch from Garland, this road trip. You had the two games where his back was clearly acting up, and it's almost like something clicked in those games where it's, okay, he's really looking to create for others. He kind of was rediscovering that balance and finding ways to be effective even when his shot isn't dropping. And for him to not really be a scoring threat for two games and still have a big impact, still taking, you know, the right shots when an open shot was there, he was keeping the defense honest, but clearly wasn't himself as a scorer. For him to go out there, make an impact, and then as he started to feel a little bit better, you could tell he loosened up and whatnot, going out there and, as I said, out-dueling two of the best young guards in the league in Murray and Gilgeous-Alexander. Like, that is just big-time, big-time stuff. And when we talked about the need for the Cavs to get kind of a franchise guy, Evan Mobley, like, came in right off the bat, you could tell. He brings that to the table. He's got that type of upside. And right now, I think Darius is showing internally that he is one of those players as well. Like, I feel like, and I'm not going to kind of criticize lists and ranking Twitter and whatnot. I mean, we are in the content business, Carter, and I will never besmirch any easy devices for easy content. But the rankings in point guards, like where Darius stands in the league, I don't think that's necessarily the most important thing. But I do have a level of confidence now, similar to how I felt with Kyrie, that even if he's going up against a point guard that consensus is a better player than him, in a playoff series, I think he can outplay almost anybody. And that's one of the most important things. Now, I don't think that's necessarily true this season, but I do think when he reaches his peak, when he's 25 years old in 3-4 years here, I do think that there's real potential. He's got that skill set. He's got that killer mentality to go out there and outplay anybody for a series. And that's one of the most important things, because we'll set arbitrary cutoffs where you, to win a title, you have to have two top 15 players or one in the top 5 and one top 20. That kind of stuff doesn't really matter, right? It's, do you have players in that tier that can elevate you? And if Evan Mobley is who we think he is, which it sure as hell looks like it, he's showing more and more dominance every single week. I think Garland belongs in that conversation, which is incredible, because the best prospect we have is Evan Mobley. And at the same time, you have two guys that are very, very deserving of all-star consideration. Not even all-star consideration. Those guys are all-stars in Jared Allen and Darius Garland. And that is just such a great foundation. That is such a great place to start from. And it's crazy that we are this good. We are potentially a 50-win team as a starting point. Like, that's absurd.
It is banana pancakes, Justin. Darius just, it looks like, you know, like games like this just make you wonder, like, okay, we know he is like a at minimum kind of a fringe all-star type of talent given his age and current production and current contributions to winning. But when you see games like this, you go, oh, but is he like another notch better? You know, it's so funny. I was talking to we were talking to Nikias and Steve on our last podcast, and it's so funny that that's the podcast where I decide to make my He's kind of Nash-esque because he doesn't need to put up big counting stats. And then he drops 32 and 8, then 27 and 18 in the next games. Like, those are super duper star numbers, man. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, I've been pretty confident that Darius is a star type player, but I'm not sure he was a superstar type player. And then you see stuff like this and you're like, maybe he
is. Doing it at 21 is pretty exciting in adverse situations. And you look right now, the Cavs' current win percentage would have them as just over a 48 win team. But, and we talked about this coming into the year, like the first half of the season, the schedule was so ridiculously hard. It's almost like the league was like, well, somebody needs to get shortchanged and Cavs probably aren't going to be that good, so we'll just kind of front load their schedule. The Cavs are now in a position where the remaining schedule, especially after that Chicago game, is very light. They're going to be well rested on most nights. I think all their 3 and 4 night stretches are over for the year. And yeah, you have a few games left against very good teams, good kind of measuring stick games. But those games are at least going to come after a night's rest. Or, you know, it's going to be a less difficult stretch, and it's going to be a lot less of a battle to go from like one contender to the next that we've seen earlier this season. And I think there's a really legitimate chance that this team wins 50 games. And that is crazy. And that's as is. We don't even know what the trade deadline is going to bring, but I think as is, this team is on pace for 50 games. Carter, do you know when the last time the Washington Wizards won 50 games?
Oh man, this is a good question. I'm going to go ahead and say, I don't know. Is it in the
70s? 1979. It's not easy to win 50 games. The 2017 Cavs won 51 games. Like, and of course that team had flipped the switch and they weren't going with the same kind of night to night consistency that this Cavs team is, and had another gear that this Cavs team doesn't have. But that's pretty significant if they can maintain this pace. And when Darius Garland, Jared Allen, and Evan Mobley are in the lineup, they are winning at a 60-game clip. They are 22-8. And that is with, and they're probably better than their record because the schedule has been so hard. So that is just,
I mean, their schedule has been so hard, and they have the top point differential in the East. They have the fourth best net rating in the NBA.
That's a great point.
I mean, I think, you know, if we're going to try, like, if we're going to play any devil's advocate, like, I mean, I think people will note that they don't have, you know, as many, like, straight-up signature wins against the best team in the league.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they haven't really taken a full-strength Miami, a full-strength Milwaukee, a full-strength Golden State down. But, like, it's just hard to worry about that much. Yeah. Like, you know, this is what makes this season so fun is, like, if they go in and they steal one of those games, it still feels like a steal. Feels like, okay, yeah, we're ready. We're ready to announce ourselves. But in the interim, just keep winning games you're supposed to win, and maybe even some that you're not supposed to win. This was not a should-win game.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that a lot of people would say that it is, but, like, you look at the situation, and teams never perform well this late into a road trip with this much turnover, with this much, you know,
at this time of the year, sorry to cut you off, but the Cavs have the longest winning streak in the NBA at 4 games because this is the war of attrition part of the season. Like, everybody is tired at this time of year, and it's rare to string wins together. It's significant, and I'm a little disappointed that Kevin Durant is now going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. I thought that was going to be a real nice opportunity to play them at home, to finally see Evan Mobley versus Kevin Durant. But you know, like, it's unfortunate, but it's a good opportunity for the Cavs to kind of, you know, maybe steal a game that they shouldn't win. And I don't think they're better than Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Miami right now, but I do think that they have an opportunity to move above some of these teams in the standings just because of the way that the schedule works out. And if you get that measuring stick series where you kind of see, okay, let's see how these young guys perform against a better, more experienced team. If that's coming in the second round instead of round one, and you maybe have home court for a series, that is a really, really great situation. And it's something that, honestly, the fans deserve, right? Like, it's so fun to see a team like this come out this way. Did you see Jared Allen's quote? Carter.
Yeah, so good.
Jared Allen had a quote about just kind of like he didn't realize how much it would mean to him to play alongside other young players that are all learning together. And you can just tell that there is a bond that goes beyond kind of the normal teammate situation with this Cavs team. And it's a really, really unique thing. And at the end of the day, like, sports is still a business. The NBA is still a business. I assume the Cavs are going to operate as one. But when you kind of get these rare teams that come together and they bond in this way and they connect with the city in this way, that's something that's really, really meaningful. And it's something that I'm not taking for granted, because we've seen like the way just one play, one injury can change a season. And for them to kind of weather the storm, to overcome so many injuries and so much adversity and difficult game situations, like, this is really, really special. And I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
It's wild to be talking about home court in the first round, man. It's wild.
Like, if KD's out for 6 weeks, the Cavs should overtake them in the standings.
Correct.
There's a real good chance. Like, if they win on Monday, which, again, tough situation. You're coming off the road trip, early afternoon game as well. Like, just the worst possible situation. Kyrie and Harden should be active. I thought Kyrie was out, but that was an error on my score app. But, you know, Kyrie making another return to Cleveland, that'll be interesting. Hopefully someone steps up and dots his eye the same way Colin Sexton did. But, you know, like, they have a chance to tie Brooklyn in the win column. That's really, really damn exciting. And here's the point that I've arrived at, Carter. Looking at this performance from Garland, looking at the continued growth of Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, just, I mean, he's one of the best centers in the league. Like, no qualifiers are needed. He's one of the best centers in the league. I have reached a point where I think the Cavs should be comfortable with the three that they have. I think there's a level of confidence you can have that they're ready to bring in a fourth. Like, that it wouldn't be rushing the process too soon to bring in another star player that goes along. Maybe even not a star player. Maybe it's a Jared Allen type, someone that hasn't made an all-star team yet, but it is like 25 or under, that fits really well, that is already a proven commodity. I think they're ready for that. I think you can have enough confidence in the upside of the three that you already have. And it doesn't necessarily have to be this year. You don't know when that sort of player is available. It might be any time over the next year to 3 years that happens.
It might be Colin Sexton.
That was going to be my point as well, it might happen internally. It might be Colin Sexton. It might be Isaac Okoro. But if an opportunity comes along to bring in a fourth guy that fits, that is already a proven commodity and maybe is already what we're hoping Colin Sexton or Isaac Okoro or Lauri Markkanen could become alongside these guys, I think you need to strike on that opportunity. And I'm not in a rush to do that. I don't think that that's a Caris LeVert type player or a Buddy Hield or someone along those lines. I would not give up Okoro or Sexton or honestly even Lauri for one of those guys. But I do think if a player like that were to become available, I think that you could have enough confidence in the upside of Garland, Allen, and Mobley to pull the trigger on that kind of deal.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get that. I mean, I've kind of been of the opinion for a minute that I've been ready for it. You know, there's a reason I've been lusting after dudes like Brandon Ingram, you know, those kind of fringe all-star wings that, you know, kind of make a lot of sense next, you know, within this core.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, man, it just feels like in a lot of ways, the time to strike. Like, yeah. You know, and I think that even extends to the way this current team needs to approach this stretch. Like, we just talked about the fact that this is a team that should start leaping over teams like Brooklyn, who are going through some adversity right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think what that means to me is, you know, you look at this upcoming, you know, 10 game stretch for the Cavs versus Brooklyn without KD, at Chicago, maybe without LaVine, versus OKC, versus Knicks, versus Bucks, which will be tough.
Yep.
At Detroit, versus New Orleans, at Houston, at Charlotte, versus Indiana, versus San Antonio, at Indiana. I mean, this is as winnable as a stretch as you'll get in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And you just talked about teams that are starting, you know, this is the we're tired part of the season, right? Yep. This is the we're starting to lose focus part of the season. And the Cavs almost had a we're tired loss to OKC last night. So, you know, everyone gets caught eventually. But like if I'm JB, I'm saying right now, this is our like let's push ourselves stretch. Mm-hmm. Of we're going to be the only team or one of the, you know, the 2 to 4 teams that is able to kind of stay focused, stay attentive to the details and fight through our fatigue, because this is their chance.
Yep.
If we're talking home court in the playoffs right now, like you got to run through this stretch with as few bad losses as you can take.
Yep.
And because these other teams are coming. This East is ridiculous. I mean, like, because like the reality is, if they have home court, that means they have a better record than either Chicago, Brooklyn, Miami, or Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
or Philadelphia like, too.
Like, and Philadelphia, they have to have a better record than two of those
at an MVP level that they are neglecting for some damn reason.
They have to have a better record than two of those five teams, mm-hmm. and that is. Like no small task. So when you do have a winnable stretch coming up on your schedule, you can't exhale. You can't breathe. You got to go and keep fighting to win these games. And I wonder how much Darius has that in mind, you know, like when he's pushing through an 18-point deficit on the sixth game in 9 nights in the sixth city, you know. And that's what is so exciting to me about this team right now.
Yeah, and the other exciting thing too is with Isaac Okoro coming back, which I think is we kind of buried the lead there and didn't talk about Okoro returning to the lineup. He played terrific against Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Like he played really, really damn good defense. And with Okoro coming back, the other thing that kind of stood out to me is JB expanding his rotation a little bit. Against the Spurs, he went 9 deep instead of 8 deep. Against the Thunder, he went 10 deep, right? And I think when you have someone like Lamar Stevens that has come out and earned minutes, it's nice now that you get a little bit healthier that you can expand the rotation. And yeah, Lamar only played 17 minutes and whatnot, but you still had 10 different guys playing over 10 minutes. And that's going to be important when you're trying to stay fresh, when you're trying to make it through this part of the season, to have more guys that you have confidence in. Dylan Windler has played pretty well recently on both ends of the floor. And while he still passes up a few too many three-pointers, I'm seeing enough to justify him getting opportunities. Dean Wade is someone that you can have confidence and can go to if you need it on a given night. I actually probably would have liked to see him a little bit against OKC, but you know, the guys that they did put in ended up making a big difference. That fourth quarter run where they gave Darius kind of an extended rest, that's something that hasn't always been there, right? Like there's been too many games where Garland would be out for a minute or two, everything's kind of falling apart, and then he comes back in not really rested and then doesn't close out the game in the same way. So to be able to buy 4 or 5 minutes and get that production out of the your bench, keep Garland fresh, and then for him to deliver, I think that's something that is very noteworthy and something that JB should keep in mind as the season continues. Like keep that rotation a little bit expanded. Obviously things are going to kind of shorten up against the better teams, and maybe now that we are playing some lesser teams, it's going to result in an expanded rotation, and that was always the plan. But I do think that that's going to be a big factor in trying to keep this team fresh.
Yeah, and like it's not like dudes didn't get their minute load, you know. I mean, obviously this was a little bit better because Love ate some good minutes at the 4 and 5 on this particular night, and Laurie ate some good minutes. Like Darius was the only one who was high at 37, but mm-hmm. you know, it's not like we're saying play 10 dudes and play them all the same minutes every night. Like when you have 10 dudes who are kind of ready to go, though, like JB can say, hey, this ain't Jetty's night. You know, he had a rough start to the game, you know.
Yeah,
went 1 of 4, missed both his threes pretty badly. Didn't, you know, and was minus 10 in his 13 minutes. And he said, hey, let's give Dylan a shot tonight.
Yep.
You know, and it's not jerking dudes around based on their performance on a night to night basis. But again, this is the end of a long road trip. Mm-hmm. Dudes had heavy legs, and like being able to cycle guys in like Dylan Windler is really, really valuable.
Yep.
And I thought Dylan earned himself some rotation minutes. You know, I think, you know, he led the team in plus minus in this one. And I think I felt that. I thought, you know, other than a few plays where Shai Gilgeous-Alexander just completely shoved him with his off arm 5 feet back. He played really, really good point of attack defense. Mm-hmm. When Okoro was on the bench.
Yep.
And like, I just think he rebounded pretty darn well. As well, like really skied for some kind of contested rebounds. Mm-hmm. And made sure he was finishing defensive possessions. I thought he played a really, really nice game. And again, when he does have that quick trigger finger, he really can get the ball up quick in contested spaces. And I thought his 2 threes were really, really important ones.
Super important. I agree. I think he played really good defense. And I think you're correct to bring up the off arm, because that was the other thing with the OKC game. Was not only were they down 18, the calls weren't going their way. Like, Lu Dort was slamming into guys consistently throughout that game. It was a really physical game. OKC's players were pushing off on it every single play. It was just, you know, that's 100% a tough, adverse situation where, as we said, it looked like a schedule loss. That absolutely was a spot where it would be understandable for them to kind of give up and, you know, just kind of call it a night and let's rest up. We've got a marquee matchup against Brooklyn coming up. Let's pull the guys and figure it out. No, they ended up responding. They ended up battling through, not letting bad calls get to them and showing composure and mental toughness. And
JB did it without just running his guys into the ground. And that does deserve some credit. I mean, there are so many games where it's like you just felt like you were playing with fire in that second LeBron era, where it was a night where they didn't have it and LeBron was willing them back, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, he played 43 minutes in mid-March, and it's like, that's not really what we like. Those wins feel a little less winny, whereas like I do think that 5 minute stretch where Garland sat, he played the first couple minutes of the fourth, then got a breather, came back in at the 5 minute mark, and it was like they held the fort.
Yep.
And it wasn't just relying on the stars.
Like, yeah, that's really, really great. And I think there's been fair criticism with JB, like that he could go deeper in the rotation. But at the same time, like, this isn't a Thibodeau situation where these guys are playing 40 plus minutes. Like, they still don't have a player that is in the top 30 in minutes per game. Garland comes in at 32nd, just behind Steph Curry. Evan Mobley at 35th. Like, they're on the verge of being top 30, but they're not playing 38 minutes a night like Fred VanVleet, who has started to show some fatigue, shooting below 40% in his last three games, right? Like, it isn't a consistent... JB isn't consistently asking those guys to go out there and play that kind of minutes. Like, there are some games where he will ride the starters, and you kind of hope that 20 and 21 year olds can go out there and play 38 minutes. Like, at the end of the day, 34 versus 38 or 37 minutes isn't going to kill a player. But when you do that every single night, that becomes a little bit much. So I think you start tacking it on.
So, like, that's why we've kind of been hooting and hollering for some extra chances, just because, again, you also need to have these guys ready, you know. Yeah. You just do, and that's why I've been really happy to see guys like Dylan get shots. I think Lamar will lose his rotation spot from his cold dead hands at this point, man. He's just earned his way through it. Obviously Isaac will take that starting back spot back sooner rather than later, and we got to talk about Isaac. Just not having a good offensive game, but like, he took Shai Gilgeous-Alexander out of the game.
Clamps, baby. Like,
we got to gift that.
No, like, seriously, like, Okoro going out there, and I mean, Shai was getting a favorable whistle, right? Like, he was being really physical, and that's one of the better young guards in the league. And for him to come out there, second night of a back-to-back after being off for 2 weeks, and like, clamp him down, like, that is something that's noteworthy. And it's, again, like, you get caught up on how exciting the kind of top three for the Cavs are, that you forget just the immense potential that some of these other guys have. And like, Lamar Stevens, I don't think he necessarily has like super high upside or anything like that. I don't think he's destined to be a starter in the NBA or anything along those lines. But him working his way into becoming a really solid rotation player, I think, is one of the better stories in a season full of great stories. Like, that is a guy that works his ass off. You hear the post-game quotes about him, like, just being ready. He doesn't want anything to be given to him. And like he keeps his expectations realistic. Like that is a high, high character guy that has worked really, really damn hard to get where he is. And it's just like it adds to the depth of this team because
I think it's just more evidence that as much as we want Kobe Altman to stay conscientious and looking for talent and not just, you know, sitting on our laurels in terms of this roster, you do got to be real careful with the kind of dudes you bring in.
Yep.
This is such a selfless team. Again, nobody on this team is averaging 20 points right now.
Mm-hmm.
There is no griping about touches, as far as I can tell.
Yep.
There is no griping about role. Everyone is working pretty darn hard on the defensive side of the ball. There isn't the one player who thinks he's above it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you look at a guy like Cam Reddish, who was traded, who clearly, who, you know, in a lot of ways fits a lot of needs for the Cavs, a high volume 3-point shooter that projects as a big wing stopper.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are things that are clearly, you know, between his ears that have prevented him from being that kind of player. And, you know, I don't think he's getting traded in New York thinking, well, now it's time to just sit down and play my role.
Yeah.
You know, like he's thinking, okay, I got out of the way of Trey. Now I get to cook. And like, I think it's a good thing that the Cavs were out on a player like that because, you know, one player can really mess with a very delicate, balanced locker room, which this one is, you know, like and Pat Riley always talks about the disease
aren't
of Moore.
High on him, right? Like you look at giving up Kevin Knox and the Charlotte pick, like Charlotte's a good team. And I saw like a lot of the backlash from like almost every fan base being like, that's all it took to get Cam Reddish. Why weren't we in on that? I'm sure teams were in on it to a certain extent, but like the Knicks weren't willing to give up Quentin Grimes. Like they wouldn't,
you can't give up Grimes in that deal, Justin.
You can't give up Grimes in that deal. And to this point, like in theory, Cam Reddish fills needs, but he's been more of a theoretical defender than an actual one. Like he is.
But the point is, the Cavs don't want to take that risk right now.
Right. And
because of the locker room they have.
Mm-hmm. And especially because he does want a more prominent offensive role. And at the same time, like you look at the games he started and he's putting up like 20 points per game in those games, but he still is the worst on the Hawks in terms of net rating, right? Like on off difference, like his impact just hasn't been there yet. And I think that's a different thing than, or that's a different situation than even Colin Sexton earlier this year, where it was very clear. There was no pushback. There was no fighting. There was no nothing. It was automatically, I'm willing to play off ball. I understand that I'm going to be a bit of a play finisher, but this extra responsibility that's been on my back for the last few years in Cleveland, now that that has been lessened, I'm going to contribute in other ways. I'm going to be a cutter. I'm going to fill the needs as a defender. I'm going to go out there and make a difference in the way that this coaching staff is asking me to do. And while I'm not comfortable spending the Cavs' money, for me, like you look at Colin Sexton going to restricted free agency, I'd kind of be okay with offering whatever was on the table last summer because you already know that this is a guy that works really hard, that's a cultural fit, that the teammates love him, and already showed a willingness to sacrifice and adjust to the role. So, like, I don't think you part with a player like Colin Sexton lightly. Like, I think that's someone that you want to keep around because he has been a big part of trying to turn this culture around and trying to change the way that the league perceives this team. So I think that's a really smart point, Carter, to really factor in what type of guys you are bringing in. And that's something.
And what kind of guys you're sending out if you are having to make a trade, you know?
Right.
Who, you know, you talk about a guy like Lamar Stevens who has really set the tone for this team. Like, yeah, you're not going to turn down a legitimate talent upgrade for the team for Lamar Stevens, but you better be ready for the locker room to take a hit. I mean, we watched this locker room take a hit when Ricky got hurt.
Yep.
They played some spiritless, sad basketball for a couple games. And that's not a shot at them at all. I think they were bummed out.
That's human. You know? We were bummed out. And, like, that was a gut punch. That's a gut punch to fans. And how do you think it's going to be received by people in that locker room that really cared about him, that Like you could tell the impact that Ricky Rubio made. Like even the fans in such a short period of time, like he really endeared himself to the fan base. And like it's unfortunate. You look at the reporting right now and everything seems to indicate that there is interest in his expiring deal. That's like, to me, that feels like something that's very, very possible going into this trade deadline. And once again, it's kind of just an understanding that this is a business and whatnot. But like, as you said, you have to be careful. You have to always take that into consideration that if you are sending out kind of a cultural leader or somebody that's really matter to the team, you want to be bringing in somebody that fits the culture that you've established. And you don't get to pick and choose where talent, like available talent comes from, right? Like sometimes you have to make some concessions, but I do think that that's something that you have to weigh when evaluating all the possible options.
Yeah. I feel like this is a team of players who have just done whatever they needed to do to win. And, you know, sometimes you're going to take a risk on a player that you know, maybe hasn't had as much winning success and bet on your culture. But it's just an interesting challenge they're going to have as they look to continue to improve this roster. But as you said, I really do think this roster is ready to be a 50-game winner right freaking now. I think they're a 50-win team if they don't have significant injuries. And I'm not saying I'll be disappointed if they don't get there, because obviously this season has been a fever dream.
Yeah.
But like, I do think it is a reasonable goal. You know, we talked about how on the last pod I thought their goal should be to win a playoff series. And I think 50 wins is part of that, as it should kind of be wrapped into that. And if they can do that, this season has been like a bananas ridiculous success as opposed to just a ridiculous success.
Yeah.
And again, I just feel like I got to keep saying it over and over and over and over and over again. This team won 20 games last year. In an 82-game season, they probably would have won like 26.
Carter, I tweeted this out, but here's an updated version. If the Cavs go 8-9 on the road for the rest of the year, they will have won more games on the road than they did in the entirety of last season.
There is
young teams don't win on the road. Like, they don't.
I don't think people understand how unprecedented this level of turnaround is without having like a cosmic event, you know, like
Boston, like going from like the worst team in the league to NBA champions because they added KG and Ray Allen. Added KG.
Like, yeah, it does help.
We also added
Tim Duncan, which is the other example, which has been the Spurs added a 4-year senior in Tim Duncan to a returning David Robinson. But other than that, like, there's just not a ton of precedent for this happening. And it certainly doesn't happen with a team this young. Like, I mean, we're seeing it happen in Memphis, but Memphis is like taking the more normal linear growth. And like, this is like maybe a steep part of the curve for them to be jumping where they are right now to be third in the West. But like, they went from, oh damn, Memphis kind of plays pretty good basketball. Oh, is Memphis good? Yeah, Memphis is pretty good too. Memphis is third in the West. That is a natural curve. Yeah. The Cavs are doing something from a regular season success perspective that just doesn't happen.
Yeah, and Memphis was a team that we identified last year, right, as a potential kind of parallel for the Cavs, where Memphis, we said, felt like a team that was a year ahead of the Cavs, right? You got John Morant, year older than Darius Garland, Jaren Jackson Jr., 2 years older than Mobley, Desmond Bane, same age as Jared Allen. But, you know, what I had said at that time, and John didn't have a great year last year, I felt pretty confident that Garland could be at least as good as Ja was last year. And Garland's been better than Ja was last year. Like, he has really taken a legitimate step forward. And I think Memphis is a great example and a great team to keep an eye on as a team that's kind of going along the same process as the Cavs at the same time. I think it's great that you have so many kind of smaller markets that have stars that seem committed to their city. Like, we talk about Charlotte, LaMelo saying that like he wants to be there his whole career, Ja in Memphis. The Cavs young guys seem really bought into what's going on here. Giannis in Milwaukee. Like, you've got all these examples across the league of these good young teams and great kind of talent and character guys coming in. And I think it's such a great place for the league to be in. And I really hope, and maybe it'll come if Memphis is a 3 seed and Cleveland gets home court, that all of a sudden the conversation is going to shift from only talking and really featuring LeBron's generation to acknowledging the youth movement and that the youth movement is not only here, but they're ready to start winning now. And I think that there's a bit of a passing of the torch going on right now. And it's exciting to me.
Yeah, this team is, it's funny. We went from a kind of a humbling loss to Golden State back to this, you know, sky's the limit optimism. Not that we ever lost the optimism, but it's fun to know like that as many hits as the season has had, you know, Sexton going out for the year, the team getting absolutely wiped out by COVID for 2 weeks, Ricky going down for the year.
Yep.
And you just kind of, I just keep waiting for like, is there going to be like a bottom dropout moment where they just play bad basketball for like 3 weeks and kind of tumble out? And it's becoming less and less likely that is going to happen. You know, just reading the landscape, evaluating the data we do have to see, it just feels like this team is just going to keep doing what they're doing. Because they've given us no evidence to prove otherwise.
Yeah, and I think the lessons from that Golden State game should still be kept in mind. Like, I think the other shoe is going to drop at some point where the inexperience shows up. The growth that still needs to be done from this young core is going to be evident. But what we're talking about right now is an opportunity to really move up in the standings and maybe delay when that moment comes. If that moment comes in the second round, that's a totally different experience, and it gives a different level of confidence in what's going on in Cleveland right now. And I think the longer you can push that off and the more growth you can show throughout the year to prepare for that moment, I think like that's what you want to see. That's what fans should really be invested in and care about right now. And it's exciting that the Cavs are now as healthy as they're going to be, basically. I guess you're going to get Rondo back soon. Trade deadline's coming up. The other thing I'm excited about, Carter, and I don't think that this has been discussed a whole lot, you're seeing COVID cases around the league kind of nosediving because almost everybody's got that. That I think that's going to happen now with officials too, because we have had way too many rookie officials in crews. And I think it particularly hurts the Cavs because you got Evan Mobley and Jaren Allen who are so good at going straight up and it looks like it should be a foul. And I think a lot of these rookie refs are calling what looks like it should be a foul in that situation. They're judging the situation rather than what actually occurred. And I think that has been really evident. Like Mobley, I will object to almost every single foul that Mobley gets called for. Like that guy does not foul. That it is against his nature. It is against his character. It's against his principles. That man does not foul anytime on the basketball court. And I do think that's something that's going to benefit the Cavs. Once again, another kind of thing in their favor that once you get more experienced officials in, because let's be honest, basketball is one of the most difficult games to call. Like from an officiating standpoint, there's so much going on. There's no real breaks in the action. Like it's not,
and
like
fouls are a judgment call in the most
fouls are a judgment
legitimate
call.
Way.
And they're tough even with replay review sometimes. So getting officials healthy and getting fewer rookie refs out or off the court, I think that's something that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, there were just even if you weren't mad at the way the game was officiated, I mean, there were just so many calls that were like 3 seconds after the play because the ref was like, "I don't know if I should be called."
Yes,
you know, and
it's not not confident officiating.
Hey, much like the pandemic outages have given opportunities to a bunch of young players who like Brandon Goodwin, who have stuck it out. Maybe we got some of our future referees some good reps in the fire before we go. Can we talk about Lori?
Yeah,
because that man has been playing pretty good basketball. I'm happy for him. I mean, I think the shot to kind of ice the game is really emblematic of it. Because
the Hornets.
Yeah, I mean, just and very much the inverse of what I've been seeing from him, which is a little bit of a when he gets a wide open shot, looks a little stiff, little timid. And you know, back to back games, he splits the double and yams in against the Spurs to kind of continue to put that game out of reach, and then against OKC. Sorry, my daughter just woke up and I can hear her. against OKC, you know, he hits the back-breaking three. And, you know, it's just really, really exciting to see him hit those semi-open threes again. You know, I mean, he wasn't even hitting wide-open threes earlier. And, like, it just goes to show you. And this is why I didn't really feel very strongly about, you know, like, yeah, you know, as the YouTube chat, as Twitter is, you know, just absolutely just spitting hot fire on the guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, well, it's just hard for me to get that worked up right now.
Yeah.
Cause like he can't make a shot, you know? And when you're a shooter that is shooting 15% over a 14 game stretch, it's like, yeah, you're going to look pretty not useful. The last four games, he scored 15, 20, 8, and 12. And he's hitting from three again. Like, that's so important. 3 of 8, 4 of 5. He was only 0 of 1 against San Antonio, but he was 4 of 5 from the field, mm-hmm. and 2 of 6 from OKC. So again, it's not like these are earth-shattering numbers, but in the month of January, coming off of, you know, an absolutely brutal December, he's playing 33 minutes a game. He's at 49% from the field, 37.5% from three, and mm-hmm. 13 points a game, and that's just fine.
Yep.
You know, that's exact. Like, we're in the just fine part of Lori. So like on the night, on the stretches where he is shooting 45% from three, because every shooter who gets up to 37-38% will have stretches where they're just on fire, right?
Yep.
Like, that's just how the law of averages works. And like, when we do see those stretches, it's gonna be like, oh man, this guy is really helpful. So it's just, I wanted to kind of shout out Lowry for fighting through a really crappy month.
Yeah.
And he feels like he's getting his feet again.
Yeah. And I think what we discussed with Lowry is important as well and still valid. Like, I think him playing out of position and playing so much small forward does take a physical toll on him. And there are going to be teams that force him to run around more. And I think in those matchups, you need to have confidence that, hey, maybe we can go to Dean or Dylan or Lamar. Like, I think you need to kind of be aware of that if you're JB Bickerstaff. And in the games or the against the teams that have a lot of off-ball movement that are really trying to compromise the defense, maybe those are nights where Lowry plays 26 minutes instead of 32, right? And OKC, I mean, they had fewer assists on the night than Darius Garland did. They had 17 assists to Garland's 18. That was not a team that's looking to move the ball a whole lot. I think the same goes for the Spurs. Like, a lot of, my God, the teams that they played, that's the other thing about this road trip. The teams that they played were not good three-point shooting teams, and they were all shooting like 50% from three. Like,
you were grumpy.
What's that?
You were grumpy.
I'm not grumpy about that, actually. I think that's a super...
You were grumpy in the moment.
Oh, I'm grumpy as hell. Yeah, good Lord. Ty Jerome hitting threes? Who are you? Who are you to do that? And like, maybe they understand that the Cavs are probably buyers at the deadline, so all these guys are like, this is my chance to go to Cleveland. Everyone wants to go to Cleveland. Shut up, Joakim Noah. But I do think, like, you have all these teams hitting threes, like, adverse situations on the road, and the Cavs found a way to respond. But the Spurs and Thunder in particular, they weren't moving the ball a whole lot. They weren't forcing Lowry to run around. And I think that really helped him. Like, that helped keep his legs fresh. It helped him still be an impact player and perform well in the clutch. And I think a lot of credit needs to go to him. And we've seen these stretches through most of the rotation players for the Cavs, right? Like, there were times where Lamar looked awful. There was times where Isaac looked awful offensively.
God, thank God that JB is level-headed, because, you know, for a player like Lamar, who is in the league because of his effort and mm-hmm. his, you know, his just being kind of a lunch pail guy, there's a lot, those kind of players, when they have the stretch that Lamar had against the Lakers earlier in the year,
yeah,
they just don't get another shot.
Yep.
And, you know, I think a lot of us, you know, it was like, okay, Lamar really isn't shooting very well. And then he goes against the Lakers and blows like 6 layups, gets yeah. sunned by LeBron. And it's like, okay, nice try. Go back to being our 14th man. And JB really trusted him.
Yep.
Lamar said it in the post game after he scored the 20 points, where he was like, sometimes I think coach believes in me more than me. And that kind of steadfast leadership just creates an environment where players feel supported. Yep. And feel like they can make a mistake or have a bad game and not have it define their tenure with the team. And that's really cool too. So it's just good vibes all around, man.
And here's the other thing too. And we discussed it a little bit, but when you're looking at the turnaround from last season, the fact that there's actually practices, like someone like Lamar has an opportunity to, you know, go out there and earn an opportunity in practice. And I think that that's something that we need to take in consideration as well. It's not just what is on TV and League Pass here. There are practices that are going on and guys are going out there trying to earn those opportunities. So I don't think it's a surprise that when Dylan gets a nod over Dean in this situation, he's playing well, he's performing well, right? Like he it seems like he's starting to earn back some confidence from the coaching staff. And I think that that's something that we always need to keep in mind is when we're asking why is somebody playing or why is someone not playing, there is stuff that goes unseen. And sometimes it's sending a message. And even Jetty Osman, like he had such a bad year last year where we talked about like him not really getting to be in shape like a lot of the other foreign players and whatnot, but he didn't have practices. There were no practices last year for him to kind of find a rhythm and regain the trust of this coaching staff. So I think that that is something that all fans need to keep in mind, and something that I kind of forget is that now this is a different environment. There are opportunities for these guys to go out there and earn some minutes. What a great spot to be in, man. Like I'm a little
let's
nervous.
Let's go beat
for this.
The Nets and Bulls. Let's go. Come on.
Let's beat those damn Nets, man. Like it would be so much fun if they won both of these two games. Like that's a really nice opportunity. And you know what happens after that Bulls game, Carter?
What?
Two nights off. Oh my goodness.
What's that like?
It's allowed. You're allowed to have two nights off. Oh my goodness, that's going to feel good.
It does not go unnoticed to me looking at every other team above the Cavs and the standings that the Cavs have played like more games than everyone except Milwaukee. It's like they played like four more games than Chicago.
Yeah, and some of that is the Cavs were forced to play through their COVID games, right? Like Chicago's got 3-4 games postponed. Those are all going to be sandwiched at the end of their season. Toronto's another team. Yeah, they had the one game against the Cavs where they had nobody, but a bunch of other games got postponed and whatnot. Like the Cavs only have one of those games to make up. And I think especially going into the playoffs, that's going to be a sneaky thing is the teams that had games postponed, they're going to have to play a lot of games at a time of the year where you'd want to be resting guys and kind of preparing for the playoffs. So that's going to be very, very interesting to keep an eye on. But that's about it for today's podcast. I want to thank everybody that is watching live on YouTube. Make sure you like and subscribe.
We had 200 plus live in the chat today.
That is some great numbers, Carter. People are feeling it. They're feeling it. It's that time.
Are you feeling
it
now, Mr. Krabs? Let's go.
The people that only tune in after football season, they are going to be spoiled by some really fun basketball.
Let's go. Welcome home. The water's fine.
They're missing all of the tough games, all the adversity. They're not going to know about the Cavs' mental toughness just yet, but you know what? It's a great, great time to join in, and hopefully this team can stay healthy and start to build some positive, or continue to build some positive momentum. But if you want to help build momentum for the podcast, whether it's on YouTube or on the podcast streams, like, subscribe, notification bell on YouTube so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.